I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are definitely talking to one of the legends of bodybuilding. This is an interview I've been trying to get for probably a few years now. Mr. Danny Padilla, the Giant Killer himself. Danny was the 1977 IFBB Mr. America and IFBB Mr. Universe. And then he was one of the best professional bodybuilders in the 70s, early 80s. His crowning achievement, I think everybody agrees, was the 1981 Olympia, where he finally came in super shredded and he only took fifth place in that very controversial show. But Danny was renowned for having one of the greatest physiques in bodybuilding because he was so well proportioned, so symmetrical, and he had really good size, and he was a really great guy. Everybody loved him. Danny Padilla, he was, I think, everybody's favorite, and was a real icon in the sport. Also featured, of course, in the movie Pumping Iron. So we're going to have two parts to our interview. Danny was generous enough to sit down for a couple hours to do the interview. So on part one today, we'll talk about how Danny got started in bodybuilding, and then, of course, his rise to fame in the IFBB, which started in 1975 at the IFBB Mr. USA contest. And then all that controversy that happened with the movie Pumping Iron, where he was supposed to be in it and he wasn't in it. And then Danny will talk about 1976, where he took second to Muhammad Makawe at the Universe, where McAway was really, really ripped. And then 1977, where he got his comeback or his payback to Makawe, and he beat him at the Universe. And he also won the Mr. America that year, the IFBB America that Franco promoted. And he beat out Roger Callard and Pete Grumkowski. And then we'll finish up our interview today where Danny talks about the 81 Olympia and what it took for him to get that shredded to achieve his lifetime best condition. So it's going to be a really interesting interview. And then we will have part two next week. As soon as our interview with Danny is finished this week, I'm going to read an article that was sent to me again by a friend of the show, Pat Comer. This was from the April 1979 issue of Muscle Builder Magazine. It was the issue with Robbie hitting a bicep shot on the cover. And I'm going to read an article written by Rick Wayne titled, "Danny Padilla is out to shock the world." So that'll be a really good article by, of course, the great Rick Wayne. So stay tuned after the interview. I'm going to read that article. All right. Before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, so last week's interview with Al Q Gurley, that was pretty well received. I didn't get any emails about it, but I did get some comments on my YouTube page because I posted it up on YouTube a couple days ago, so I will read those in a second. I want to wish Mr. Frank Zane a happy birthday. Frank's birthday was April 24th, and he is now 79 years old. Frank was born in 1942, so next year will be the big 8-0 for Frank Zane, if you can believe it. Unbelievable. One of the greatest icons in the sport of bodybuilding. Three-time Mr. Olympia, and I think Frank is still doing good. He still looks healthy, much thinner, of course, than he used to be, but he looks very healthy, still working out, and I think he still does a lot of coaching. I'm on his email list. I get his emails all the time. Still selling his books, so Frank is still healthy, thank God. Still doing good. And Danny just turned 70. When I talked to him, I think he turned 70 only a few days before our interview. So our legends are getting older, but they're still around and they're still healthy. So that's all we can hope for. I'm thinking about putting out some audio books. I have 3 books now that are available on Amazon. They are in soft cover, so I don't even have them in ebooks yet. One, of course, is the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, which was my bestseller, I think, out of all the 3. The other one was the MP6 Workout, which is the kind of workout program that I follow. So if you're into working out, you want to make progress, it's about cycles with power training and then mass training. It's really good, I think, especially as you get older, because this is what I've been using probably the last 5 or 6 years, maybe even a little bit longer. Because the reason I like it is you're not training to failure, and you're just slowly building up the resistance each week, but it is a progressive resistance. And it seems like it really works well for me as I've gotten into my 50s, where I'm not training like super heavy or training to failure or really trying to push it. That was great when I was younger, but the MP6 workout seems to work much better for me now that I'm a little bit older. So that might work better for you guys too, if you want to try that. And my other book, which was my last book, was Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. So I'm thinking about putting some of these books on audio. So I will let you know how that goes. I have a friend of mine that's going to help me out to do that. So when that becomes available, I will definitely let you know. And my diet's going good. Lost another 1/4 inch off my waist. So I should be in pretty lean condition by the time of June 1st, right after Memorial Day. So that's my goal. So I haven't been really in ripped shape since 2018 because I had those hernia surgeries the last couple of years. So I'm due now to get in great shape again. All right. So let's read some comments here on my YouTube page about our interview with LQ Gurley. Dean Phillips said, I always liked his physique growing up. Great interview as always. James said, Hansen's channel is the best in my opinion. Very knowledgeable, especially on the historical part. And I learned something. Gurley's overall package was one of the most memorable, in my opinion. I love bodybuilding. I've been training since I was 17. I'm 58 now. Never, ever stop. You never get tired of the pump. It's a connection to my younger days. It keeps me young at heart. Kurt said, I competed at the show that LQ first guest posed at after turning pro. He was a great poser, friendly, and he had a lot of charisma. Dean Phillips says, wow, this interview is off the chain. I watched it twice. LQ is the man. Racer X said, that dude is ageless, my hero from the big 80s. Love and respect from New York City, LQ. Another great one, John. Devin Rivers said, this is a great video. I remember seeing LQ in the Muscle and Fitness magazines back in the day. Good memories. Jerry said, great stuff. Once again, thanks, LQ. Seems like a really good guy. Same age as me. Bobby DeMarco said, thank you, John. Fantastic having LQ on. Awesome. I watch his 92 routine at the O all the time. I love his physique and how he showcased his living art, and he was a great addition to the bodybuilding circuit at that time. Chris Reed said, another terrific interview. Great insights from LQ. Sergio Mulis said, I can't say I knew much about LQ before this interview, but I really enjoyed the discourse. Besides looking great for his age and only 4 years younger than me, LQ has some very good insights regarding the sport. Thanks again, John. Popa said, John, great interview as always. I was watching older interviews, and your Dorian Yates Part 2 was deleted. Yes, that was deleted from London Real, which is a big business type of company. And they did a few famous interviews with Dorian many years ago, and I guess they bought that footage from all his Olympias. So, in as you know, with these video interviews I do, I always put in video clips and pictures, and I put some video clips in from some of the videos that I guess they owned, and they deleted the whole video. So I'll have to look into that, see if I can edit out those parts that they deleted it for, and maybe I can get it back up. But that was a really great interview, so I hate to have it gone. And this other guy says, X-Gamer said, invite Dorian Yates again in 2021. Yeah, that's a possibility. I'm sure Dorian will be up for that. He was a great great guy. And I know he just did an interview with Fuad Abiad that got lots of views. I think he got 60,000 views in like 2 days. So Fuad's got a huge show. Everybody listens to his show. So Dorian is always a great interview. Very insightful and very intelligent. So yeah, maybe I could do that again, do another interview with Dorian. All right, so that's all I got for our opening. Here is our interview with the great Danny Padilla, the Giant Killer, part one of our interview. And stay tuned right after, because I'll be reading that article from the April 1979 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, the giant killer himself, Mr. Danny Padilla. Danny, how you doing? Thanks for joining me.
I'm surviving another day here.
Well, happy 70th birthday, first of all. You just had your 70th birthday this last week, right?
Yeah, it was scary. I was laying on the beach in California, and I woke up. I'm here in a cold room, 17 years old. I don't know what happened.
Right, I know. It flies by, doesn't it? Jeez. Well, Dan, we always like to start at the beginning. So if you could tell us how you got started in bodybuilding, what got you started in weightlifting, that whole story.
Well, I'm sure they've heard it before, but when I was a youngster, probably at the age of 8,
okay,
my brother was a wrestler, and my cousin David was a wrestler, and they used to lift weights in the basement, okay, and they had pretty good physique. So that got me started on weightlifting, little stuff, York barbell set. And then we made up our own stuff, you know, like we would take two pieces of wood and nail them into the top so I could do wide grip chins. And we would go out and get the sewer caps and
yeah,
in there. So I come from a family of 10, and my dad wasn't going to spend $100 on weight set.
Right.
So that was a start for me. And then I, back home where I grew up, there was a little store. And this guy had all these comic books, and then I got to see my first bodybuilding book.
Mm.
And I remember at the time it was Dave Draper, Chuck Sipes, Chet Yorton, them guys. I mean, people ain't going to know who these guys are, but
we do.
Eury Colbert with the big arm, you know.
Yeah, so these were the old muscle builders then, huh? The old muscle builder magazines.
And I picked up my first magazine, and that was the end. I got hooked.
Wow, really? So was there any particular guy you kind of looked up to when you were reading the magazines?
Well, you know, Dan Lurie had a guy and leader, Freddie Ortiz.
Yeah.
Like me. He had this tremendous physique that he really never got recognition for. But for myself, just all the guys, you know, the biggest hero for me was my father because he was a rugged guy. He was short, but strong as 10 guys, you know, and he could knock somebody out one punch. I mean, the guy was a bear.
Really?
So, yeah, he was really one of the big motivators for me. But looking at all these magazines, you know, you got to see all these guys. Dave Draper, Larry Scott with a tremendous bicep shot.
Yeah.
Sergio came along, and then eventually Arnold and the guy. So they were all very motivating for me. And so I started competing in the AAU. So I didn't even know about bodybuilding contests until a friend of mine Lada, his name was Lada. His last name was Lada. He said, "Danny, man, how long have you been training?" I said, "Training for what do you mean?" He goes, "You know, you got muscles," because I was genetically gifted. And I,
yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Dan. Like when you started, were you skinny? And then did you?
I was small. I was very light.
Okay.
Let's put it this way: when I graduated from high school, I weighed 148 pounds.
Wow.
So I was a little guy. I wasn't even 5 foot yet.
Wow, really? Okay.
Really. So at the time, though, you know, I was very athletic, very strong. Of course, that came from my parents. I was a great gymnast. I could do anything gymnastic-wise. And he convinced me to compete in the YMCA Mr. Rochester.
Mm.
And I won it. So at 17 years of age, that was my first title, Mr. Rochester.
Mr. Rochester. Okay. So when you started weight training, you grew pretty quick. Your body responded pretty fast. Well,
you know what? I got muscular, but I didn't get big.
Okay.
So, but I got pretty muscular where it was, you could recognize that I did something. You weren't sure.
Yeah.
And so I kept going. Then we were in the AAU, and I competed in a lot of shows in the AAU, and basically I went national. And I did the junior nationals, and I didn't do bad. I did the America a couple times. You know, I was in the low numbers there. And I'll never forget the AAU judges told me, "Look, you got a tremendous physique, beautiful balance, but you're just too little. I'd give this up if I was you." That was what they told me to do.
Wow. And I was looking at some of the contests you were in. And like you said, some of those Americas and stuff, you were way down the list. It looked like they just had a whole list of competitors. Was that just one group or did they have hike classes?
Yeah, that was just one group.
One group. That's what it looked like, yeah.
And there was no height classes. The only time I hit height classes when I went around, you know, the area like Schenectady and Buffalo, Syracuse, they had short man. And back in that time, Pete Kumkowski was the big shot around here, and he would win all those shows, and I'd be second to him.
Okay.
And so I grew up being second to Pete. And then when the AAU told me, you know, you suck, I said, well, it's time to go see who else, what kind of shows I can enter. And at that time, I met John Balick, who was a photographer.
Yeah.
At the time, and he said, man, you got a tremendous physique. And don't listen to those guys. Keep going. And I said, yeah, well, I'll find something. So then I decided to go into the IFBB Mr. USA show.
Right.
I said, I'm going to train 1 year straight for that, and that's what I did.
Now, did you know somebody in the IFBB, Dennis?
I knew nobody.
Okay.
I just found the show.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going. And it was great because I had a lot of guys from my area, a couple guys used to train with me. And they said, yeah, well, I'll go. We'll have a ball. We'll go to New York. Because, you know, go to New York. It's big.
Yeah.
And my first big show where I got the light bulb was the Mr. USA. And it was in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, 1975, right?
Yep. And so I walked in there, and I was pale as a ghost. Nope, not very much color. But, you know, naturally, I'm brown because I'm Hispanic.
Yeah.
And so I walked in, and there's Arnold, and there's Franco, Robbie Robinson, at the time, Roy Callard, or not Roy Callard, Roger Callard.
Yeah.
Robbie Robinson, and so Franco Colombo. And so that was the first time I got to see the West Coast guys.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think? What did you think after reading about these guys?
I was like, wow, these guys look tremendous. But yeah. I didn't realize how good I looked because I just trained, you know.
Yeah.
And so when I walked in and they said, okay, you got to weigh up and we need your name. And Minicello, who ran the show, he says, well, where are you from? And I says, I'm from Rochester, New York. He goes, holy, how long have you been training? I said, oh, not too long. So he was in shock. So he said, you were sent from heaven. Because at the time, New York was kind of fighting the West Coast.
Right, you know? Right, yeah.
We didn't have the bodies.
Right.
So here I walk in.
From nowhere.
And out of nowhere, I walk in, and I win the height class, and I win the whole show.
Wow, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So I had the New York push. So, of course, at the time, Roger Callard thought he should have won it. You know, he looked pretty good, very nice physique, a very handsome kid.
Yeah.
Nice hand. And then there was Denny Gable, who was Arnold's training partner.
Right, I remember him.
Very nice guy, very handsome guy, too, beautiful tan, but the legs were kind of off.
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning for me. And that's when Joe Weider, of course, said, Daddy, my God, you look tremendous. Where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. They're asking me all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, my whole life was going to be that I was going to run the mom and pop store. And bodybuilding was just going to be fun.
Right.
Because, you know, I never had any ambition to be the guy.
Yeah.
And so then he said, I want you to fly to California. We're gonna make a star out of you and all this crap.
Was Joe out there? Was he out there for the show?
He's out there, yeah. He was talking to me.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to do a photo shoot. I want you to meet me at this place and all this stuff. And then, of course, I met
Dan. Robbie won the Mr. World, right, Dan?
That's right, at that time. And I talked to Robbie. They were very nice. Ed Giuliani was there also.
Yeah.
And so the only guy that was a little upset was Roger Callard. He was a little upset that he lost, but the rest of the guys were cool. You know, they introduced themselves, and that was the beginning for me because then Joe brought me out to California to train for the Mr. Universe.
Yeah, wow. So now you won the USA, Robbie won the Mr. World, so you guys thought you were automatically on the team, right, to go over to the Mr. Universe?
Well, I supposedly I was automatically because Joe Weider said, I need you to come out because we're doing Pump and Iron.
Okay, so they okay.
I was out there for Pump and Iron,
right.
And at the time, people didn't know Mike Mentzer was out there in the background, but he still wasn't. You know, he wasn't that guy yet.
Right,
but he was there.
Yeah.
So I got out to LA, and they had already gone through some stuff, and that's when they introduced me, and they said, "Look, how would you like to do Pump and Iron?" And I said, "Well, are you paying? Are you the guys getting paid? What's going on here?" Because you know, I grew up in a kind of a business background. So, and my dad was pretty smart. I was dumb. And so I was like, are we getting paid? He goes, no, it'll be seen all over the world. You'll be famous.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I did a couple little things in there. I saw Arnold and, you know, we were in some of the stuff. And then,
so you go to Gold's in that summer and did you spend the whole summer out there?
Yeah. I spent the whole summer training for the universe. at the time when I got out there, the last so many months or two, I trained for the universe.
Wow. So tell me about that, Dan. How was that training at Gold? That's the original Gold's.
That's the original Gold's gym, and there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It was like the Holy Land. It's like the Holy Land in the Middle East there. It was tremendous. The guys are all cool.
So you're training alongside Arnold and Franco, Robbie, and everything there.
All the guys were there, but so was Robbie. Guys flew in from Europe, too. Dave Draper was this huge gentle giant.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, because when I was a child, I used to dream about Gold's Gym.
Yeah, everybody did.
Here I was at Gold's Gym. There is a God, you know. I'm in Gold's Gym, and it was like nothing I can describe to you. Nothing. It's like eating the best meal ever.
Yeah.
Best of the best. I'm training alongside them, and it was like everybody's got a little bit of an attitude in the sense of, but everybody got along. You know, it was great.
Were you training by yourself?
Never been like that.
Yeah. Were you training by yourself all summer?
At the time, I was training by myself, and then I trained a couple times with Arnold.
Really?
Ed Horney came out. I trained a couple times with Eddie. I trained with Denny Gable.
Yeah.
And then it's just guys that were there, half of them I don't even remember. Oh, Ken Waller.
Yeah.
And so we all trained. Paul Grant was there. And so, you know, it was a great experience. I can't even describe it to you.
Yeah. Did everybody, like, kind of take you in? You're the new guy, the new young guy?
Well, they would say, here's that guy that I don't know how he won in New York. And so Arnold, one day, we're doing calves, right?
Uh-huh.
And Arnold says, come on, we do calves. And so I was short, and the machine was a little high, so I had to put a big block. We switch it. And so Arnold would say to Joe Gold, the new guy here, he needs a ladder so he can do calves. That's the kind of crap I had to put up with.
Right. That's awesome, man. That had to be an unbelievable experience coming out of Rochester. You're probably, what, 24 years old?
Think about it. Rochester's famous for Kodak at the time.
Right.
So here I am in the greatest place in the world, that I thought. And then we went to Muscle Beach.
Yeah.
So I got to see bodybuilding at its highest level for me.
Yeah, in the golden era, yeah.
The golden era, the best of the best. And then eventually we had to make the trip to Africa, which was like, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was really horrible.
Yeah. So I've read about this now. So you're on the plane, Robbie's on the plane, you guys are going to the universe, and then they got Ken Waller, and then Mike Katz is there, but you didn't know. Did you know Mike was going in the show?
Well, see, here's what was supposed to happen.
Okay.
This is what we were told. I was short class. Robbie was the middle class.
Right.
And Mike Katz and Ken Waller were supposed to have a pose down in the room the night before, and that guy would represent the heavyweight.
Okay.
Okay? This is what I was told. So I'm participating in all this stuff in Pumping Iron. I'm doing all this stuff with, you know, photo sessions, all this crap.
Did they film you a lot at Gold's over the summer, Dan? Were they filming you a lot? Did they film you a lot at Gold's also with the cameras, the pumping iron?
Yeah, we were all there. I was filmed a lot, but I got taken out a lot because it was an embarrassment to the IP.
Right, yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
See, I was stupid. I should have sued. I would never have to work again.
Yeah, right.
What they did was the morning of the show, I was told you're not competing.
Hmm.
The morning of the show. I was eating breakfast, getting ready to get on the bus. And they said, well, you know, you're not going to compete. I said, what do you mean I'm not going to compete? I'm on the team.
Yeah.
And nobody would explain it to me. So I went to Oscar State. And, of course, at the time, I blamed Ed Jubenville, who was the coach of our team. He was our coach.
Right.
Every team had a coach. And he never came to me. So for years, I blamed the poor guy. And I come to find out later that it was Butler who said, why don't you let the little guy stay out and we can have Ken Waller and Mike Katz in the back, you know, fighting for the position.
Yeah,
and
that was
threw me out.
Part of the movie, yeah. Right.
So it was basically Pumping Iron did that.
Mm, wow.
So when I went to Ben Weider, I said, Ben, what's going on here? And he's like, what do you mean? He said, you got to take it up with the management. I don't know what's going on. I said, you're the president. You got to know everything.
Right.
And he said, that's just the way it's effing is. So now I go to Oscar State, and he says to me, Dan, are you not competing? And I says, Oscar, somehow I got bumped. He says, how? That's not possible. You're a member of the team. So the guy from Portugal, the coach, came by, and I said to him, you don't have a guy in your short class, do you? And he could speak Spanish, and he says, no. I said, can I be on your team? Are you kidding me? Is this a joke? And I said, no. So I said to Oscar, Oscar, I want to get on his team. Can I do this? Because he was the head of the European.
Yeah.
And he said to me, well, I don't know how we're going to do this because he liked me. I said, Oscar, my mom was born in Spain. My dad was born in Puerto Rico. They had to go by Portugal to get there. And he said, but a story that stupid, I got to let you in. So he let me in.
So he lets you into Team Portugal. Okay.
I, if you look at pictures that you don't see very many because it was an embarrassment for everybody.
Right.
I'm holding a banner and it says Portugal. It doesn't say USA. If you'll find it on the internet. If you look, you'll see it.
That's when all the athletes come out on the stage. And
right.
They
so we all carried a banner back then.
Right.
I got a stick banner that says Portugal. And Arnold's in front of me in the seats laughing his ass off. He's like, right. Oh, my God. Danny. So now I get on stage and I'm competing and I'm kicking everybody's butt.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to win the universe. I was the winner. They had a kid from England and somewhere else and they protested. Somebody from England. And Oscar State was from England and he let me in. But one of the guys protested and there was a big meeting and I got kicked out again.
So how far did you get in the competition, Dan?
I was at the finals getting ready to win.
Wow.
I was going to be crowned Mr. Universe.
Damn.
And I got bumped. So now, if you watch Pump and Iron, the only piece that you see me in that whole movie is sitting down with Arnold.
Watching
Arnold came over to me and said, Danny, are you okay? I am so sorry. I said, you know what? The hell with it. And then I looked at Franco. And that's when I said, my God, look at those legs. He could fly with those things. They're like wings.
Right, right.
And that's the only part you see me in Pump and Iron.
Oh,
but that's when Arnold came over and asked me if I was all right because I just got kicked out.
Jeez, unbelievable.
Story.
If you would have been on USA team, you would have won your class.
Oh.
And then it would have been you, Robbie, and Ken Waller. It would have been an American
sweep. You know what? The first time in the history of the sport, we would have won all three classes.
Right, right.
Unbelievable. So they're embarrassed now. So now if you notice, you hardly saw anything when I came home. And people ask me, I thought you were competing in the universe. They thought I was lying.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, Dan. That story's crazy. And it was a true story. It truly happened to me.
Unbelievable.
And like a jerk, in love with bodybuilding, all I had to do was get a lawyer.
Yeah.
They're going to have to write me a check.
Right.
You know, they have to write something and say, here's $50,000, go away, or here's whatever.
I
could say I'm mentally unstable now because they destroy me. You make up some crap and you get a nice check. But for the love of bodybuilding, thinking, you know, I'll be back. I'm going to fight harder.
Yeah.
And I ate it. I ate that bullet.
Yeah. So you got your first taste of bodybuilding politics.
And when I listen to guys today, they look at me and they go, well, yeah, you were okay, but it was easier then than it is now.
Yeah.
I said, are you kidding me? You don't know what it's like. You don't know what we go through. I don't know what you go through. I said, baby, I got the trail of tears in bodybuilding.
Right.
I can tell you so many stories that you would say are impossible.
Yeah. So how about your popularity, though, Dan? You had to be, like, really popular because you were in the magazines all the time. You were the new superstar on the IFBB.
You know what? I was popular, but the problem with me was, you know, I never, like, I loved bodybuilding, but it was for fun. My idea was to come home, go to work, and that was it. But I never thought about being, you know, the guy in bodybuilding, making a living, and I was stupid for doing that.
Yeah.
Because at that time, I could have done very well, and like, you know, you're trying to get a hold of me. Well, that's the way I was back then. Wasn't interested.
Yeah.
I stayed away.
Right.
It was like, or something come up, you know. And so I really didn't take advantage of a great situation.
Yeah. Were there a lot of bodybuilders doing posing exhibitions back then in 1975?
Yeah, we were doing exhibitions.
Okay.
We invented seminars. You know, we come up with ideas on how to try to make money in the game.
Yeah.
Because there was money, but not like today.
No, yeah.
And you know, and back then, Mike Mentzer, at the time, we were trying to get into the internet, you know, and he lost a lot of money during that time because it just didn't happen. It didn't explode like it did later.
Yeah, it's just before.
But we already were trying to invest in the internet, and we took a beating because it just it didn't happen like it is right now.
Wow.
These guys are lucky.
Yeah, yeah, they are, yeah.
This is a powerful machine you got here now. Yeah. And I don't even take advantage of it. I'm not tweeting. I ain't doing nothing. Everybody says, are you rich? I said, I'm hoping to get a glass of milk tomorrow.
So then you go home, right, to Rochester after that experience, and then do you train for next year? Is that what the plan
was? I go home, and my dad says, what happened? And it was like, he says, well, we're going to get a lawyer, right? And I says, nah, let's just go to work. In fact, I'll never forget when I won the USA, I come home. Now, think about this. The Madison Square Garden, I won my first big show.
Yeah.
That's bragging rights. Madison Square Garden is like that place. So I come home with these three big trophies. And my dad says, wow. He says, you won? I go, yeah. He goes, so now what? I'm Mr. USA. He goes, okay, how much money they give you? I go, nothing. He goes, okay, put those up there. Here's the mop. Let's finish the work. that's what he thought of bodybuilding.
Right. Let's get back to work.
So now it was like, all right, I got to go back and train. So then I stayed home, and I went back to L.A. and trained for the universe again. I really wasn't dieting hard. I was just trying to get big.
Well, next year they had the America in New York again, right? In
70s. Right. They had the America. And I didn't compete that year. I didn't compete that year because I went into the universe, I think it was.
Well, no, you went in.
I did the America. You're right. I won the America that year.
Yeah, Mike won.
No, because I won the America and the universe the same year. So that year I might have gone in the America and got beat again.
Yeah, I think you won the short class, but Mike Mentzer won the overall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And so I got to compete in the universe.
Right.
And I got beat by Macaulay.
Yeah.
Okay, that was in Toronto. And yeah. In fact, Arnold and the guys were sitting there, and the audience went nuts when I lost because I was so little but so big.
Yeah.
Back then, they didn't care about, you know, all these cuts.
Yeah.
And Macaulay was very aggressive, had a nice upper body. His legs were weak, but he was tremendous. And,
yeah.
And he won the show.
Did you know about Macaulay before that show? Or was he like a total surprise? He was a total surprise.
Never came out
anymore. Yeah.
The Europeans all came over. And then I got beat there.
How was that event in Toronto? That looked like a huge – I saw
it was a huge venue.
The audience was huge, right?
The audience was huge. And even though I lost, they were screaming for me.
Yeah.
And that's – to me, I got even more recognition from that show because then they got to know who I was.
Yeah.
Because that was pretty big at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the body-wise. But I was smooth. I mean, I could have been harder, but I wasn't really that interested. And then I said, you know what? I got to win this show.
What did you think of Mentzer when you first saw him? Because that was probably the first time.
I saw Mentzer. I said, you know, this guy's got a lot of potential. He still had some weak body parts, but he was a good guy, very mm-hmm. intelligent. And, he had a tremendous physique. And I said, man, this guy keeps going. He's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, I just talked to Jack Neary recently, the guy who was writing for Muscle Builder.
Yeah.
And I think that was that America in 76 was the first big contest he covered. And he said that was the one where Mentzer kind of came out and everybody saw him for the first time.
Right. That was the starting point for him.
Yeah.
Right there, that show. And he did well. And from that point on, he went up the mountain.
So after the universe in Toronto, then do you go back home again? Is that was that
pretty? Yeah, I stayed. I stayed home.
Yeah,
and I didn't go back to L.A. I stayed home and I trained, and I trained at home for the America. And I'll tell you how crazy that was. I was training with a good friend of mine named Larry Baker,
who's yeah.
now an attorney. Him and I were real close friends, and we trained. And he wanted to go to L.A. to. He was going to law school, so he wanted to go there and take the exam. You know, so he says, why don't we drive to L.A.? So a week before the show, I drive to L.A.
Wow, from New York.
That was insane. and we got there 2.5 days. Yeah. Okay. And in the process of going through Missouri or one, we almost got killed by a hurricane. You know, it almost sucked us up.
Right.
So,
right.
Anyways, I get all the way to LA, and I show up. We left on a Saturday or Sunday with rest time. We got there like on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So him and I went to the beach, relaxed. Then I walk into World Gym. It was World Gym now. It wasn't Gold's.
Okay.
And I walk upstairs and walk in, and everybody's looking and say, isn't that guy Padilla? And he says, yeah, what are you doing here? I said, I come here to pick up my trophy. And they're like, what? Yeah, I'm going to win the America. And I was in pretty good shape. Not enough color, but in good shape.
Yeah.
And of course, Roger got all emotional. And he said, he was like, nobody's going to beat me because that was Arnold's training partner.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, and then Ken Waller, who I didn't even know, and he just said, damn, he looked pretty good for a little guy. I bet $500 he wins the America. So all hell broke loose. Roger got all upset. You know, and Arnold's like, just train. And so the show gets there on a Saturday, and it was so funny because at the time, Tony Novak, who was, he used to work with Arnold, and you remember Tony. Well, him and Ed Giuliani were working out together.
Okay. So,
and what happens is Ed tells Tony, when they compare me and Dan, let me know what shots I'm winning, okay? And he says, okay, that'll be good. So he's sitting right in front, and I'm sitting there, and we do a double by, and Tony Novak goes, nah. Lat spread, Tony goes, nah. Okay, side chest, he goes, nah. And so Eddie says that was the most humiliating. Eddie tells me the story back.
Right, right.
Make a long story short, I win the lightweight, okay? And then I win the whole show.
Right, you beat Gronkowski.
Gronkowski's in shock. He's got his hand on his head like, what the hell happened? And Roger is pissed off. This can't be.
Right.
So now, I'm in the shower, okay? And Waller says, come on, we're going to go out and celebrate. They make me come out again for another prejudging because Roger was upset.
Wow, really? They brought you guys back out?
Honest promise. I had to come out for prejudging, soap in my hair. I had to clean it up. I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
This is after the decision?
After I was already awarded everything.
Holy cow.
It was like a little protest. And I don't know if Arnold did it or Roger was upset. They said, let's look it over again.
And Franco was the promoter, right?
Right. And so Franco and whoever else said, he's the winner. The hell with it. So then I took my trophy. I was so pissed off, and I smashed it. It's a little Mr. America trophy. I smashed it.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah. I didn't. The hell with it. So we went out and partied a little bit. Me, Waller, a couple of the guys, even Denny Gable was with us.
Yeah.
And so
I think I read about that, Dan. Didn't you guys go to like a disco or something? And Waller?
Yeah, we went out and partied. Got a little bit of trouble, but we were all right. But Franco, who I loved, got upset with Joe and said, this guy broke the trophy. So Joe said, what's wrong with you? Why'd you break the trophy? I said, I'm Mr. America. The trophy's no bigger than my fist. It must have been one of his trophies that he won in Italy. So we were always busting chops, you know?
Right.
But that's a true story. That truly happened there.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of that contest. That looked pretty cool. They had some movie stars there too, right? Didn't they have like Burt Reynolds was there?
Yeah. Yep.
Alex Field and John Saxon.
Stars came in.
Yeah.
And crazy as it was another crazy thing like Madison Square Garden. I won in LA, unheard of. So, New York loved me after that. Anytime I competed at the Beacon Theater,
right.
It was nuts.
You got the rivalry, right?
I was the guy, I was the rep. So
get on the Universe team again. And you're going to...
This story's even worse, okay? You're going to say, come on, you're making this up. I am not making it up. I had to do a show with me and, at the time, Mike took off. No, Mike was there too. We had to do a showdown to represent. They would have to pick whoever would go to the universe.
Right, I remember that. That was like the US.
Alex was there.
Yeah.
I was there. Mike was there. And we were chosen to go to the universe. Now, supposedly, we're supposed to have tickets, everything ready to go. And Mike is gone already. And so me and Cal go to Minutella and I says, well, we're the reps. Where's our tickets to go to the universe?
Yeah.
I don't have no tickets to go to the universe. He goes, and, you know, Cal was a hot-tempered guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, no ticket. Okay. So Cal's pissed off. So we call Ben. We call the IFBB. We call Joe. And Ben says, what the F is going on? I said, we have no tickets to get to New York. He says, are you kidding me? I go, no. So he calls, and all of a sudden, two tickets appear. Go to the airport. They have two tickets there. Fine. We get to the airport. We fly all the way to, I think it was England.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's an airline strike.
Oh, no.
We get there, there's an airline strike, okay? Uh-huh. Now we're doing 2 days, okay? We're stuck.
Because you got to go to France.
We're trying to stay on a diet. Me and him are walking through the airport.
Oh, man.
And he had his wife with him, and she was an angel, you know, putting up with us. And so we were going up and down, and there's a strike. And now how are we going to get on a plane? So some guy recognizes us. And he says, what are you guys doing here? I says, well, you know, we got to get to France because Joe's in Nimes. And he says, look, give me your luggage. He says, just go walk on that ramp and don't turn around.
Oh, really?
He put us on the freaking plane. So they said, hey, what are you doing? He says, go, go. We get up there. He puts our luggage in, and he got us to France. True story.
Was this a guy who worked for the airlines or something?
Yeah, he worked for the airlines. He was a bodybuilder type. He saw who we were. He knew what was going on. He says, I can get you on this plane, but just go. And it was a blessing from heaven. It was like an angel was watching.
Yeah, really.
I swear. From day, this whole trip was another nightmare. So now we get to France, okay?
Right.
We get all the way to France. And we have no ticket to get to Nimes. We're supposed to get to Nimes. We don't have a ticket. The ticket stops there. All right? So now we're starving. We can't eat because we're on nothing carbs. Trying to stay in shape. Walking back and forth. Push-ups. And in France, the sinks are so big. I said to him, dude, I got to wash. I can't be like this. This is 3-4 days. I can't do this. So I'm sitting in the sink washing myself, right? Everybody's laughing. All of a sudden, these cops come in and says, what the hell are you doing? I said, oh, sorry. He goes, I thought this was a shower. You know, I played dumb. Get out. So I had to put my clothes back on. And it was like a joke, okay? So now We make a call to Ben, and we go, yo, we got no way to get. He goes, what? Are you kidding me? No, we got no way. So we finally catch a plane. He gets us a ticket. We get on a plane.
Right.
So now we get all the way to France. We get out of France. We go to Nimes. We get to the hotel we're supposed to be in. There's no room. No room for us. Okay?
Beautiful.
It's like, and Cal's like, how can you stay so calm? I said, Cal, we got to figure something out. Getting angry ain't going to get us nowhere.
Right.
Because he was a tough guy, and he was strong.
Yeah, yeah.
He was pissed. So now we're calling again, MFing. We get a room. So now we call somebody, and they said, you got to take a train. We go take a train. There's no ticket, so we had to pay for it. They said, well, we'll reimburse you.
Yeah.
So we get all the way to Nimes now, okay?
Right.
Now we got to go to a meeting. Now, mind you, the show is Saturday. We finally get there Friday. Everybody's been there since Tuesday.
Yeah, they've been there all week. Yeah.
So we get there, there's a meeting, and it's like this big meeting, and they're telling what room you're going to stay in because we didn't even have a room yet. So now they say, okay, Dan, you're here. And at the time, one of the writers for, what the heck was it? Armor Tanny. Tanny was the writer.
Armor
and he was there too. And so they said, okay, Dan, you're going to be with this guy. I said, who the hell is that guy? I don't know who he is. you know, he was a little swishy, and I didn't mind, but he wasn't staying with me. Yeah. So everybody broke out laughing, and then Tanny said, I'll stay with Dan, and you can put him with whoever. So at the time, I was a youngster, you know, what did I know? And so now I get this room, and Cal gets the room, and we're talking, and that's when Tanny says, Danny, what happened? Why? I said, you don't even want to know. Because he worked for Joe. I says, this is the biggest F-up I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I said, but it's my life. This, I call it the trail of tears, because this is the crap I went through with bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So now we get there, and me and Cal, we're jogging, okay, to trying to make sure we make weight.
Okay.
So, because I had to weigh 165.
Yeah.
So now I get there, and we get to we have to go to the show. We get on a bus. Thousands of people. I've never seen so many people.
Wow.
Okay. France was crazy.
Wow. Okay?
I mean, they were nuts. So we have to go in, and they make you weigh on a scale.
Okay. Right?
So I get in there, and I'm eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Starving.
And so Muhammad says to me, Macau, he says, you want chocolate, Dan? I go, no, I'm eating that. He goes, are you not afraid to eat that? And I said, champions ain't afraid of nothing. I knew he was the guy to beat.
Right.
So now.
Dan, were you surprised that he came back to compete again after he won it the year before?
No, because he you know, the Europeans are very proud people. So I think for his country, he was trying to win it once.
They keep coming back, yeah.
I know that, I think that Ferrigno did that, you know.
Yeah, he did.
If I had stayed in the universe, I could have won it 10 times in a row.
Sure, yeah.
Nobody could beat me at that weight, because 162, 165, I was untouchable.
So much size, yeah.
So now I get on the scale, and they weigh me 162 with a peanut butter sandwich in my hand. So the guy that was with Muhammad says, this can't be right. Make him strip. Like, what do you mean, make me strip? What's that got to do with anything? So I put my sandwich down. I said, why do I got to strip? Because that's the rules. All right, so I had a strip. So the guy looks at me, and he says, there's no way this guy weighs 162. He's too damn big.
Right.
Check the scale. They made him check the scale again.
Oh, man, really? Jeez.
True. I'm not lying to you. So then I'm helping Cal, and at the time, you know, I knew Mike, but not that well. Him and I later became very good friends.
Yeah.
But I'm helping Cal to try to win his division. And so now the show goes on, and they're doing Wild World of Sports, I think, did something.
Right.
I'm practicing the posing, and basically I was huge and very muscular, but not a great tan again because of the week that I lost trying to get there.
Yeah, sure.
So now I go to the back, and Arnold says to me, you know, you look really good. I don't see how they could beat you. So now the coach or whoever the guy was for Macaulay is yelling at Ben, saying, we have to win this. There's no way that I can bring him back to Egypt and not be Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
So Ben says, he says, well, what do you want me to do? We don't fix shows. What do you mean? He has to win. And he says, look, don't take it up with me. I have nothing to do. He got all crazy and started yelling at each other. So I ended up winning my division, okay, and then Cal won his division.
Yeah.
Okay, he was the heavyweight. I was the lightweight. And I think the other Beckles from the island, I think he won.
No, Roy Callender won.
Or Roy Kent, whoever it was, I couldn't remember. So
yeah, he beat Darcy Buckles, you're right.
Yep. So now we're winners, okay? And show's over. I go to my hotel. I'm victorious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go. Everybody's gone. So I'm saying, where the hell is everybody? Me and Cal looking around, and so we go to look. We have to take a train back, but we have no ticket to get home.
Oh my God! Never ends.
So, I'm with John Balik, and I said, he said, look, I'll pay for your ticket. I said, don't worry. As soon as I get home, I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
He said, not a problem. I trust you. So, we're going over this big bridge. water, and what I had to take home was a trophy and yogurt. I had the yogurt Yoplait.
Right.
So I got this trophy, and I'm walking me and him to get ready to catch the train. And I said to John, "John, make a wish." He goes, "What do you mean?" I threw the trophy over the bridge.
No, again.
I said, "I got a choice between yogurt and the trophy. I can't eat the trophy, but I can eat the yogurt."
Oh, man.
He said to me, "Gotta love you. You're nuts." So now we get on this train, and there's bodies all over the, you know, the way in Europe there, they just lay down. I mean, it's crazy the way you stuff in there. So we get in there, and we get to the main airport, and I get a ticket. And as soon as I got back, I called John. I said, "John, give me the bill, and I'll send you the money right away." And of course, I took care of it.
Yeah.
And he says, "No, I'm going to the IFBB and the Joe Wheeler, and I'm going to embarrass them and make them pay that bill." I said, "Don't even worry about it." I said, "You know what? Bodybuilding is not important to me. I'm going to be a grocery store owner. I don't give a hell about this bodybuilding crap.
Right.
I'm a mom and pop store." And he got his money back. He went to Joe was so pissed off because he blamed Minichiello. Minichiello blamed him. It was a big mess. And then there was a big upset because Mike, who they prepped to take the universe, got beat.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What did you think about that with Cal and Mike?
Well, it was weird because, you know, Mike looked tremendous that night. Cal's upper body was tremendous.
Yeah.
His legs were off a little bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Calves were a little shy. But he did shots where you didn't notice that.
Right.
And the Europe went nuts. And it was we couldn't even get on a bus. There were so many people.
Yeah.
Screaming, trying to pull at us and stuff. And so, you know, for me, it was very close. If you're going by complete physique, Mike wins. If you're going by just big muscle mass, because, you know, Cal was the next Arnold.
Yeah.
You notice they had all those shots of Cal, upper body, side chest, double by, because he was a big, strong guy.
Did you meet him that year, Danny, in 78?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of him as a person?
He's a good guy, you know, but he was a no-nonsense guy.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Like Sergio. Sergio's a no-nonsense guy.
Yeah.
You can't talk BS to Sergio. Don't try to cheat him because he'll punch you right in the face.
Right.
That was Sergio. He was no-nonsense. Don't disrespect me, buddy.
Right.
And
right.
So that was Cal. And I'll never forget that after the show, you know, Cal was so upset. I mean, he was pissed.
Why?
Because all the shit we went through to get to the universe.
Yeah.
That we were mistreated. How do you treat us guys who represent this company?
Yeah.
Right. So I was home, and then I flew to L.A. I said, "I'm going to just relax and train and have fun." And so I'm out there, and Joe gets a hold of me, and he says, "I want you to come out to the office." And I come out to the office, and Cal's there, and he's arguing with Joe. He wants a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe's offering him. He goes, "No, I'm worth more than that. I want money. This is what I want, blah, 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 blah." And at that time, Joe had this huge table, okay? And on this table in the office, it was a collector's item, this table. I mean, it was worth probably $100,000 because it was an antique. But on it, he had everybody's files, pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
So Cal gets pissed off and starts looking all over for the pictures of his pictures. "You ain't using my pictures." And he's smashing and throwing stuff all over the place.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy cow. So now he grabs his pictures and he leaves. And Joe's, upset and emotional.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget on the way out, he's grab him. He's got, grab this guy. And everybody just closed the door. We ain't going after that nut. He'll kill us. Because, the guy could bench 500 all day.
Right.
Back then, that was a lot of weight.
Right.
I mean, he could incline 5. He could decline 5.
Wow.
I mean, he was a powerful guy, and he was upset. So just let him cool off. And then, of course, Joe didn't call the cops. He just basically let him cool off. He said, "Bring my pictures back." He didn't care about it. Just bring my pictures back.
Right.
So he had to talk to Cal's wife. But poor Cal was upset, and right after that, he quit. He just disappeared.
Yeah.
He said, "I'm done."
Hmm. And what, Danny, what happened with that? Remember the union they were going to start in 1978 in the summer?
Well, we were trying to start a union.
Cal was the head of that, right?
Yeah, Cal Scallop was involved. And we tried to get everybody together, but somehow Joe Weider got a hold of the information. We had like two or three meetings. Somebody inside there gave us up.
Mm.
And because even Arnold was interested in the union. He wanted it.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, Arnold was part of it.
We all wanted the union, and somebody inside there gave us up, and we never knew who it was. And basically Joe said everybody's checks will be cut off, and you'll be suspended from the IFBB, this kind of crap.
Was Joe paying you guys like a monthly salary?
What Joe would pay us... a couple bucks here and there, depending on, let's say you had a show and he said, I want you to come out. He'd get you a room, you know, a place to stay, and then he'd give you a stipend every week.
Okay.
But in return, you did photos that were worth millions of dollars and you're getting coffee money.
Right.
Well, who the hell knew? Who knew back then?
Right.
You know, you're getting $1,000 a week. You're hell. I'm doing good. But not realizing he's going to make $30 million off you.
Right.
Like my image, I never made a penny off of it.
Right. Yeah.
I made nothing. The giant killer. You know, it's like, forget it.
So when Joe found out about the union then, how did that, like, end it? Why was that
over? Basically, he said anybody who gets in a union will be kicked out of the IFBB. You won't be able to compete with us, number one.
So if all you guys would have...
get the check, he cut them off.
Yeah. If all you guys would have stood together, it might have worked, but probably not everybody was going to do that.
Well, I said, let's do it, but the guys all got scared.
Yeah.
They all got scared.
Yeah.
And so, to me, it was a mistake because today everybody would be making money off their image the way they should have.
Yeah, for sure.
Whoever knew that we were going to
be
so powerful.
Yeah.
You were just happy. You were just happy to get in the magazine. Wow, I'm in the magazine.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm in Weider's magazine, you know. It's like, where are you going? But who knew?
So in 1978, that's pretty much when the pro circuit started, right? Because that was the first night of the champions.
And of course, the guys were like, yeah, we can do this. And I was the only one to say, you're going to do that many shows. You're going to starve that many times.
Yeah.
Back then it was low carbs, you know?
Right.
Bring your brains off. And so, and we, in order to enhance bodybuilding and try to bring money into the game, we did the pro circuit. But again, the bodybuilders didn't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
It was the promoters who made all the money and the magazines who made all the money. And again, we got peanuts.
Yeah.
I used to complain all the time. I used to say, if a bowler can make $100,000 bowling a ball, why aren't we making $100,000?
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, we were getting a $10,000 check for being the best bodybuilder in the country.
Yeah, in the world.
It wasn't money. But to us, because we come up hard, to me it wasn't money.
Yeah.
But to these guys, it was money.
Yeah.
To the midget, it wasn't money. But
so you did you did that show in July, right? That Gold's Gym Classic, and Robbie was in it, and you got second place, right? Didn't you?
Yeah, I got second there.
Yeah,
I trained for like 12 weeks for that.
Okay,
I was trying to get the caddy, but they had a Cadillac because Ken Sprague put that show on, I guess.
Right.
So I did pretty well there. In fact, that show there, Mike Mentzer and I, after that show, went to Frisco. At the time, I was married, and he had his woman, Kathy, I believe it was, and we went to Frisco, and I kept eating, and I was like the Hulk ripping out of my clothes, like crying with laughter because I kept swelling up like a balloon. It was horrific.
Right.
It was so bad that I had to sleep face down with my head hanging off the bed. And Mike and my wife, they took a picture of that. But that's what I remember from that stupid show.
Yeah, I interviewed Jerry Granum a few times, and he used to tell me stories about, like, you'd be in New York all year, and you'd come to Gold's in the beginning of the summer, and you'd be, like, you know, 140 pounds or something. And he said, like, in 2 weeks, you gain, like, 20 pounds. You just blow up.
Well, see, that was I think for Arnold and I, and physique-wise, we were the same that way, because Arnold really didn't stay big off-season, you know?
Yeah, he would shrink up.
He would slim down a little bit, and I think, the difference with us and them today is the fact that we gave the body a chance to rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't take drugs all year round.
Right.
And I mean, you could diet all year round, but that's too stressful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For me, I used to take a complete time off, time out. I'm going to go play basketball. I'm playing football, baseball with the guys. And I would work out, don't get me wrong, but I would eat clean, but not, you know.
Not strictly.
And yeah. So I would slim down, and I always used to say, my theory was, it's easier to gain and get in shape than it is to lose and get in shape.
Yeah.
Which today, the system now is get as fat as a cow, weigh 400 pounds to get down to 200. How dumb is that? I'll never understand that logic.
Right, right. Plus back then too, Dan, right? The guys didn't do a lot of drugs. I mean, they didn't do them all year. They only did them like a certain part of the year, right?
Right. If the guys did a cycle here and there, they were dumb.
Yeah.
It's like they don't get off.
Yeah. Plus, they don't. Yeah, they don't.
I talk to guys all the time and I try to explain to them that your body becomes immune to this crap. You need to take time down, but they all want that tattoo and that big arm. So, because you got the internet.
Yeah.
You know, you keep looking at yourself.
You got to look big all the time. Yeah.
You got to look big all the time. And the other thing with this stuff today is like, I'll go to the gym and I'll work with a client and we do a whole body workout in, let's say, 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. These guys are still on the leg press doing a set.
Yeah.
Right. Taking a picture. They got all this weight. They move it maybe a quarter of an inch.
Right, right.
And take more pictures.
Right.
It's like, what is this?
Yeah.
With a headset on, you know. It's
right.
Like,
and the phone.
It's not working anymore.
The cell phone, right.
It's different now.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you guys train back then, Dan? Were you all going like 6 days a week? I know you weren't like super, you didn't go super heavy, right? You just more pumped.
You know what? I used to off season back home when I was younger, I went pretty heavy.
Okay.
For me. But getting ready for a show, when you're on low carbs, you're just not going to go heavy.
Right.
So we would do 6 days a week, you know, Monday through Saturday, and you train each body part twice, and then right near the show, we would double split where we do chest back in the morning, legs at night.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to starve because you're going to burn that weight off.
Yeah.
And basically, Joe paid us to train. So we ate perfect.
Yeah.
We behaved. You know what I mean? You got the sun. So you created some tremendous physiques.
Yeah.
But now it's different, you know, but I understand. The game has changed, but the reality is the push-pull system is the best system there is.
No, how many weeks out would you do the double split?
So we would do, let's say Monday, I do chest and back in the morning, and then at 3 o'clock I would do legs. And then the next day we'd do shoulders, arms, and then at night I would do calves and abs and a little aerobics. And then Wednesday started all over.
Okay.
So you did each body part three times a week. So there's no way you're going to be, you know, squatting 900 pounds. I mean, no. I've done a 500 squat with no problem. I did a 450 bench with no problem.
Yeah.
I've done press behind the heads with 225 with no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys are doing more, but I was only 5'2", so.
Yeah, yeah. How many weeks out from the show were you, did you do the double split, Dan?
Well, the double split would be like 3 weeks before the show.
3 weeks, okay.
For me, I would do the regular training 6 weeks before.
Okay.
Like, I would do 6 weeks of a normal training, what I call normal for me, and then you intensify the workout with a double split, and then try to control the calories and the carbs.
Yeah, and you said the carbs were low back then, right, in the 70s.
Well, all of us were on 60 to 100 grams of carbs. So you were training on pure balls, you know.
Yeah.
That's right. Realistic. And that's what separated the mice from the men.
were you eating more fats, or was it just mostly
protein? I was eating higher fats. We were eating, you know, red meats and chicken. And as you got closer to the show, we cut down on the red meats and went toward chicken and fish.
Wow.
But we, you know, a lot of times I'd have a bowl of fruit in the gym, like strawberries or something. And in between sets, I eat a strawberry too.
Okay.
Your brain functions on sugar. You got to have something.
Got to have something, yeah, right.
You didn't need a lot. And, you know, and the better you got, you could raise your carbs. So you start at 60, you go to 100. Really, it's 60 because of the loss.
Yeah.
And you go to 150 carbs, really, it's like 60 anyways because of the way you're burning it.
Yeah.
So you adjusted. You adjusted. You had to listen to the body. And if you felt a little too weak, then you had to do it. And then, like, when I did the show in 81, I said, I'm going to be so cut, they're not going to believe it.
Hmm.
So I did double split, And then the last week of the show, I starved.
Hmm.
I did no training whatsoever.
Okay. Then
the crazy part was, for that show in 1981, I was jogging 8 miles twice a week.
Wow.
No problem.
Wow.
But I was my protein, I never went past 100 grams of protein, but my carbohydrates and fat were on the ceiling. I would eat 20 yogurts and stuff like that.
Really?
Huh. Really. True story. And I was burning it off. I would jog to my house and then ride a bike back. And I did stuff like that. So everybody knew
me. Because of the high cardio.
Right. Because of the high cardio. You had to eat. You got to feed the body. You know, you don't starve. This is why when I listen to bodybuilders today, well, I can't do cardio because my body shrinks. I said, do you know what the word cardio means? 2 hours. 1 hour. You're walking on a treadmill.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to shrink.
Right.
So, I don't know where they get this information from, but that's what that's the crap they tell me.
Yeah.
But for that show, the last week, I starved. I went from a 2,000 calorie to a 1,500 to 900 calories.
Wow, 900 calories.
900 calories. But I was drinking a lot of water, and I'll never forget, I would get up, have a poached egg, a little, either half a cup of oatmeal or farina with three peaches, and then at night I would have a salad with chicken. So you know I was starving.
Oh, okay? Man.
And then I went to zero carbs Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before that show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like completely depleted. And my father would look at me and say, son, you look like you're going to die.
That
stuff is crazy. I ate Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the 81 Olympia. So everybody says, oh, my God, he was skinny. He didn't weigh. I weighed 178. It was the heaviest I ever weighed.
Okay.
In that cut, 178 of us.
I was going to ask you what you weighed for that show.
I weighed 178.
Wow.
The problem for me was when I went through a vacuum, I would, you suck the abs in and the face sucks in with it. So they're like, oh my God, look at the bone sticking out.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of great shots you never saw because the IFBB was embarrassed. They didn't want you to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a bad show for them.
Yeah.
That was a terrible show
for them.
It was a bad show because I'll never forget. When I walked in, Tony saw me. He says, Danny, how you been? Because we were good friends. He goes, you in shape for the show? I says, I'm ready. He goes, Franco can't lose. I says, it's okay. I just want to stand next to my hero.
Yeah, yeah.
He's great, and I want to compete. I want to be compared.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guys all call me, Zane and them guys, don't go, the show's set up.
Right.
You had the Australian show.
Right.
So they're going to do the same. I says, I don't care. It's not it's about me now.
Yeah.
It's the last chance I'll get to compete against my hero.
Yeah, because he was only coming back one time.
Franco was tremendous in his heyday.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget in the back where Arnold would say, Franco, I think you should drop out.
He said, really?
No, I got this. I got this. No, I got this. Because I don't know, the guys look, no, I got this. I'll never forget that.
Did Arnold say that at the contest?
He said it at the contest in the back room.
Wow, no kidding.
He could deny it, but
yeah.
I was
at that show, Dan. When you walked out, I didn't recognize you at first. Because your face was so sucked in,
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was ready. And some of the shots, you don't see the best shots, but I've got certain shots that, I couldn't get more cut than that.
Oh, people still look at some of those shots from today, and they're just in awe. Yeah, because you look incredible.
I was right on point there.
Yeah.
So, and I think I changed the game that time because everybody started trying to get that look now.
Yeah.
Bigger, of course. But so for me, because Zane pulled it off.
Yeah.
And so it was, people – I got called – my buddy – Faxamir Benu was in the back, and he ran to the phone and said, Danny Padilla's Mr. Olympia.
Wow, really?
Yeah, he was in the backstage.
Yeah, yeah.
And my buddy that trained with me said, did you hear that? Danny? I said, if I get fifth, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah.
He says, what do you mean? I go, trust me. I could smell it.
And
the score sheets were ridiculous.
Yeah.
How did I not get a perfect score for symmetry?
Yeah, I know. I've gone over those score sheets, and I noticed that, Dan, some of the –
the mandatory poses I scored low.
Right.
And look at the shots. I did them perfect.
Yeah.
So how can I score low? And then the shots with me and Franco, I mean, he was thick, but, the beauty that that physique for me that night, it was right on point.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect.
The abs were there. The back was shredded. Any shot I did, I was shredded.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is what it is. But you never hear me cry about it.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thank you to all our generous Patreon donors who donate money every month to the show. You guys help keep this show going, and I really appreciate you guys. If anyone out there is interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor or donor, you can just go to the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner. All right, so I want to read this article, which comes from the April 1979 issue of Muscle Builder Magazine, written by Rick Wayne himself, and it's called Danny Padilla is Out to Shock the World. The thing that strikes you first about Danny Padilla, once you have gotten over his amazing physique, is his most refreshing humility. It is something that borders on self-deprecation. Ask Danny how he developed one of the greatest bodies in all of bodybuilding, and chances are he will start to tell you how his sister has great calves, even though she has never worked out with weights. Or you'll hear that his dad looks like a bodybuilder, even though the only weights he ever lifted are synonymous with his shopkeeping business. Danny will also tell you he never took bodybuilding seriously enough to train more than 3 months for any contest. And yet, he is a Mr. America title winner, holder of a string of other titles, including that which he won over Egypt's Mohamed Mekawe at the IFBB World Championships in Nîmes in 1977. Danny Padilla first hit the bodybuilding big time when he won the Mr. USA title against the likes of Roger Callard and Denny Gable in New York 3 years ago. A few months later, the 5'4" champion flew to South Africa full of confidence, ostensibly to compete in the 1975 IFBB Mr. Universe contest that was held in Pretoria that year. Unfortunately for Danny, politics and a general mix-up forced him out of the picture, and he had to bow out of the event. Even now, he looks back on that episode with anger. "I was in the greatest shape of my whole bodybuilding career," he said. "I was confident of winning the title on my first try." You know how it is. You hit top form, and if for any reason you miss your opportunity, well, who knows when you'll be as motivated again. Which is to say that he had trained for the South Africa contest like never before. His big win in New York had given him cause to push himself harder than ever before. And in a way, he was doubtful he could ever hit the shape that he showed in Pretoria. Indeed, Danny returned to his native Rochester, New York, determined to concentrate on business. Bodybuilding was for the birds, he tried to convince himself, a waste of time. But 4 months before the 1976 World Championships, there he was in the gym, kicking smoke, to use his line. 4 months. Yes, that was all the time Danny gave himself, all the time he figured he'd need to topple any other short man who dared to come up against him in Montreal. He reckoned without Egypt's entry. For that year, the feisty Mohamed Mekawe was at his best. He came on aggressive, big, and ripped, with abdominals that might have been borrowed for the occasion from one of Da Vinci's works. For the first time in his bodybuilding life, Danny Padilla knew what it was like to know you are beaten even before the bell. He went through the motions, he will now admit, knowing that there was no way he could stop Mekawe. Even as he posed against the Egyptian, he was mentally preparing himself for their next encounter. He started 1977 with a win over Roger Callard and the gargantuan Pete Gromkowski. Very little had been heard of Padilla since Mekawe forced him onto the sidelines. Indeed, it was generally believed that the New Yorker had thrown in the towel for good. Roger was getting all the exposure from California, and not one word was being said or written about Padilla. Yes, that year it seemed Callard would end up American champion. 3 days before the contest, however, Danny Padilla showed up at the Weider Building in Woodland Hills, California. The widest smile you ever saw decorating his pleasant, perpetually young features. Yes, from out of nowhere, Danny Padilla had come to town on business, Mr. America business. He showed us his calves first. They looked as if they might have measured well over 18 inches. Then he hauled up his shirt high enough to show rock-hard abdominals. So much for all that talk about him not being able to stick to a definition diet. Our boy had apparently gone on a fish-eating program, and clear-cut muscular definition was the result. And still, he appeared massive. His arms were rounded with biceps that showed all the striations usually associated with super champs. His triceps were unbelievable. But he said he weighed less than 158 pounds. Poor Roger. The writer said afterwards he never had a chance against Padilla, even though the Californian was better than he had ever been before. Padilla had tasted victory one more time, and he loved it.
Now he set his mind on revenge against McAway. But first he had to win his place on the U.S. team to Nimes. He did so with ease in New York, but it was obvious he had gained a few inches here and there, fatty inches that could have wrecked his overall plan. There was talk about gourmet feast involving Danny and his friend Ken Waller, another notorious eater. Danny and Ken, said the word, had gone on a food-consuming spree right after the Mr. America contest, for Danny had stayed in California to prepare for the World Championships. And there was evidence around his waist that what they said about Padilla and his pizza vendors of Santa Monica was not altogether untrue. But Danny had learned. He shed some 5 pounds of excess body weight in the few days before the Nimes encounter, enough to regain winning shape. And true enough, he walked all over the overconfident McAway. Danny Padilla had arrived. He was now American and world champion. Now all that was left was the 1978 Mr. Olympia. But first, he chose to take bodybuilding seriously. Pushed by his friend Joe Weider, Danny came to realize professional bodybuilding could not be taken lightly. Joe convinced him to come out to California for a year at least. For most of 1978, our man blasted hell out of his naturally well-formed body. He grew bigger and shapelier. He also developed more ambition. He would compete not just in the Olympia of 1978, he told us. He would be up there against Robbie Robinson and Roy Callender and Gronkowski, and yes, McAway again. Danny had decided to take on all comers in the 1978 World Cup contest. Came the day, and even Danny's best supporters must have had cause for worry, for Robbie was at his best, fresh from blowing ambitions in Wayne D'Amelio's Night of the Champions. And Callender seemed ready to devour dreams by the million. Coe had turned up too, and Bill Grant. Well, finally the dust settled, and a roar went up from the packed auditorium when it was announced that Danny Padilla had wiped out everyone else to take second place to Robbie Robinson. As usual, the body he presented had been flawless. Perfectly proportioned arms, massive deltoids, incredible thighs and calves, and a back that evoked memories of Arnold Schwarzenegger. One down, one more to go. Now the giant killer set out for the biggest test of his career, Mr. Olympia 1978. Well, that was a disaster that Danny Padilla does not wish to dwell on. All he will say is, I blew it. I came in fat and I got properly whooped. I got beat fair and square. I was lucky to play sixth. Indeed. So now Danny Padilla is hard at work, putting himself through the toughest regimen since he first set out on the competition circuit. Only a few days ago, he promised to shake the world this February in Florida. A new aggressive Danny Padilla has arrived, inexorably determined to emulate the success of Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose physique Padilla so closely resembles. Robbie had better prepare for his first shock, said Danny recently. I am going to be cut to the bone. The fact is that no one comes close on the matter of symmetry. Padilla is the most beautifully put together physique on the scene today. If only he can be muscular in February, chances are the world will be shocked. Certainly Robbie has never taken the New Yorker lightly. Hear him. When Danny Padilla is down for a contest, you don't say anything about the results, not until the whole thing is over. The man has absolutely no flaws. You just hope he won't be cut. If he comes in ripped, obviously Danny is determined to be ready in every department that counts. His training is a tested and proven formula, the actual workout, that is. If he can only stay off some of the stuff that he loves to eat, we could see incredible things in 1979. Not so long ago, Danny Padilla conducted a seminar at the Warrington Olympus Spa owned by George Snyder. He told a large audience of competitive bodybuilders, the first thing you have to do is discipline yourself. You've got to decide how badly you want to be a winner. You've got to develop a sweet tooth for victory. After that, you must take stock of yourself. You've got to face facts. Do you have what it takes to be a champion? Are you being realistic with that ambition to develop 20-inch arms? Not all of us can be champs. You have to accept that. So much depends on your genes. An ectomorph is hardly likely to end up with thighs like Mike Mentzer. I'm not saying you shouldn't train hard and try to make it in competition, only you shouldn't get carried away with ambition. You hear Danny tell it, once you have made up your mind to be a champion, practically everything else must take a back seat. I made the fatal mistake of training part-time for years when I ought to have been hitting the weights hard and regularly. Take a tip from Joe Weider. Be ambitious, but take things step by step. Train like the devil, and once you have made your mark in bodybuilding, use that to achieve your other ambition. Danny Padilla swears by milk and egg protein and subscribes to the popular theory that the competitive bodybuilder requires 1.5 grams of protein per pound of body weight. Like most of the other super champs, he admits to using anabolic steroids, but only for 8 weeks, just before his last contest. In the off season, which is to say up to 3 months before the Mr. Olympia contest, this could well change since more and more worthwhile IFBB events are being scheduled, Danny trains just 3 days a week, but with particularly heavy weights. The purpose here is to develop body mass and power. He keeps his sets and reps fairly low during this period, and the training pace is not particularly rapid. That does not mean he falls asleep between sets, but the workout speed is not quite as hectic as later on in the year. On Mondays, he works his chest and back. Wednesdays, calves and thighs with some abdominals. Friday, arms and shoulders. One Padilla quirk, he does not increase poundages each succeeding set, as is the custom with most bodybuilders. Instead, he pushes the weight each workout. That is, he will pick a fairly heavy poundage for bench presses, and for each set, he'll aim for an increasing number of reps. Then for the next time he bench presses, he will start with a heavier poundage. Unusual, but for him, it works. Danny's exercise routine during the off-season consists mainly of the basic movements: bench presses, squats or leg presses, cheek curls, presses, calf raises. Four sets of each particular exercise are all Danny does in the off-season, usually two exercises per body part. It should be borne in mind that at this point in his career, Danny's training routines are very peculiar. Rather than seeking larger body measurements, he plans to retain his incredible mass, but with deeper muscle separations and striations. Danny's pre-contest routine is as follows. On Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, he works his chest and back in the morning and his lower body in the evenings. He trains his shoulders and arms in the morning each Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The training speed during the contest preparation period is blinding. He makes a point of trying to beat the speed record each training session. There is no talking between sets. Indeed, when he is not actually doing a movement, Danny will stand before the gym mirror and deliberately tense the area being worked. Say he's working his arms. Well, when he does take a short pause, he will practice tricep poses, double bicep flexes, and so on. He says this is great for bringing out striations, besides teaching him muscle control, which is an important factor in competition. The routine, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, chest, bench press with a shoulder-width grip. The weight is brought down until the bar touches his nipples and then pushed up again. He does 5 sets of 8 to 10 reps. Incline bench presses come next. Same shoulder-width grip as the other version. A strict movement, no arching. The bar is brought down to the base of the neck. Again, 10 reps, 5 sets. Flies, he does 12 reps here for 5 sets, using as much weight as he can with elbows slightly bent. Cable crossovers and dumbbell pullovers across the bench are done in superset style for just 2 sets of 12 reps. Lats, wide grip chins, he moves from front to back of the neck each rep. Altogether, he performs between 15 and 25 chins for 5 sets. Barbell rows, knees slightly bent, medium wide grip, bar is pulled to his navel and slowly lowered to starting position, 5 sets, 12 reps. Cable pulls from the low pulley, arches his back as the weight is pulled to the chest, chest is held high, does not lean back as the cable is pulled. 10 to 12 reps, 5 sets. Behind the neck pull-downs on a lat machine, Danny does this movement in the seated position. Sometimes he pulls the bar to his chest for variety. He uses a shoulder-width grip, 5 sets, 12 reps. For legs, leg extensions, he uses 200 pounds for 10 sets of 15 reps. Holds the legs in the extended position for a count of 3 before lowering. Squats, he works up from 225 to 325, 12 to 15 reps. 5 sets, goes down to parallel position before recovering, now lower. Leg press uses between 300 and 400 pounds in the 8 to 10 reps, 5 sets, a slow concentrated action. And I'm guessing that's the vertical leg press since that's all that was available back then. Leg curls, his final leg exercises, he does 5 sets of 12 reps with as much concentration as possible. Lower body is kept flat on the exercise bench throughout the movement. Calves, standing toe raises on the machine, goes for maximum stretch as he comes down, goes up as high as he can. Toes are pointed slightly inwards. He does 8 to 12 reps, 5 sets. Donkey calf raise, he uses the heaviest partner available, does 5 sets of 15 reps. Calf raises while seated at the machine, same style as the standing version, uses up to 400 pounds. Danny makes a point of advising trainees to use a thick belt when handling heavy weights. He always performs his leg exercises barefoot. Abdominals, he does sit-ups and hanging knee raises, 15 reps per superset. The movements are done in alternate fashion. Altogether, he does 5 supersets. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, he does shoulders and arms. Standing laterals to shoulder height, he uses up to 40-pound dumbbells, 5 sets of 12 reps. There is no swing here. The lateral head of the deltoids are made to carry the bulk of the work. Press behind the neck, he uses a maximum of 200 pounds. He does not lock out the press, trains with a continuous motion, five sets of 10 reps, and seated bent over laterals, a very strict movement for Danny. He uses 40-pound dumbbells, does 8 to 12 reps, five sets. Biceps, alternate dumbbell curls, five sets of 8 reps, concentrated action, forces reps but does not swing. Pays strict attention to lowering of the weight, slow and deliberate. Barbell curl, shoulder width grip, uses as much weight as he will allow, 6 forced reps, he does 6 sets. Triceps, lying tricep press with up to 240 pounds, weight is brought down as low as possible and then pressed out again, does not lock elbows, continuous movement, 5 sets of 12 reps. Lat machine press down, strict movement, heavy as possible for 5 sets of 12 reps. 2 weeks before his contest, Danny adds another movement to his triceps and biceps routine. This is the routine that has done the most for Danny Padilla. Obviously, it is a champion's routine, and it should not be attempted by beginners. All right. Great article by Rick Wayne. Good information about Danny's training, especially with the weight used and everything. That was pretty good. All right. That's it for the show. Next week, we'll be back with part 2 of our interview with Danny Padilla. Stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.